May it please the court?
Yes, you may proceed.
The issue before this court is whether Mr. Daniel engaged in the unauthorized practice of law after his license was suspended by this court. The answer to that question is clearly yes. The respondent has lodged certain procedural attacks as to the notice leading up to his suspension, but at least as to two admitted instances where he engaged in the unauthorized practice of law, those attacks are immaterial because Mr. Daniel admits that he practiced law on three occasions after his suspension.
Now, do you notify him when you suspend them?
Pardon?
When you suspend an attorney for not paying taxes or COE or something, do you notify them by using the address that they submitted in the registration form?
Mr. Daniel was sent notice by the clerk of the court before his license was suspended that he had not paid taxes and that his license was subject to be suspended.
Was it returned?
No, it was not.
In fact, there's several notices sent, aren't there?
By the court, there was only the one notice sent.
So that's, he might face suspension, but once he's suspended, does he get another notice?
He does not.
Now,
at this time, the court did not send out additional notice.
Now, if we suspended someone, usually it's in the Missouri Bar Journal. These cases, there's so many of them, you don't put those in the Missouri Bar Journal, do you?
No. But.
So you notify him that discipline may be taken, but not that discipline has been taken.
Correct. But in this instance, he continued to engage in the practice of the law even after he did have actual notice that his license had been suspended. His license was suspended by this court in February of 2009, and he denies knowing about that. But in February of 2010, he has admitted that he called the court and inquired as to where his bar card was. And he was told by the clerk's office that his license had been suspended. And they told him it had been suspended because of tax issues. And they even gave him the number of the Department of Revenue. Additionally, also in February of 2010, he received a letter from Alan Pratzel, the chief disciplinary counsel, telling him that an investigation had been opened because in January of 2010, a judge had reported that he had appeared in his court representing a client, and it was after he had been suspended by this court. So he received those two notices in February of 2010, yet after he received those two instances of actual notice, he practiced law two times. In July of 2010, he filed two motions to dismiss in the St. Louis County Circuit Court.
Only two times?
That I know of, Your Honor.
From January to July, only two times?
Okay. That I know of. I believe his primary practice these days is in Illinois. So he filed a motion, filed the motion to dismiss in July of 2010, and that was in early July of 2010, about July 8th. And then on July 9th, or around that, he received the information that our office filed in this case charging him with the unauthorized practice of law. He answered that information with those charges on the 12th, and then he again engaged in the unauthorized practice of law on July 28th. So he has clear instances where, even after he had actual notice of this court's order, he continued to practice law.
Now, is your request that he be suspended with no leave, and if not, that it not be stayed, that it be with leave to reapply for admission after 1 year? Is that what you would always recommend in cases where someone has practiced law after being suspended for tax purposes, or are there exacerbating factors here that lead you to ask for that?
Well, I think there are some aggravating factors here. Number one, he's been practicing law for 35 years. Number two, he engaged in these instances. I mean, it's pretty flagrant when you continue to practice law after you've already had a charging document filed against you.
Do I understand he's still suspended in Missouri because he's still not dealt
Correct.
With the tax issue?
Yes.
Now, what isn't he violating? What law is he violating? Is it a misdemeanor, a felony? engaged in the unauthorized practice of law?
There is a criminal.
And what is it? A Class D felony? A misdemeanor? What is it?
I'm not certain, Your Honor.
You're not charging him with a criminal violation. You're saying he violated our ethical rules.
Yes,
which,
I am.
Which preclude the unauthorized
yes.
practicing law without a license. Mm-hmm.
But if he right. did perform, if he did do the unauthorized practice of law, he's still violating the law, isn't he?
He is, and that would be referred to the prosecutor to.
Did you refer it to anyone?
We have not, to my knowledge.
So can we suspend someone who's already on suspension?
Well, I have asked you to impose a suspension that would become effective on the date, if any, that he resolves his tax issues and presents the certificate of tax compliance to this court.
Have we ever done that kind of anticipatory relief before?
Pardon?
Have we ever done that kind of anticipatory relief before?
You have. You did that in 2010 with a man named Schutz, S-H-U-E-T-Z, and in that case you impose respondent was on a tax suspension. And he had some disciplinary issues. It wasn't a UPL case, but he had disciplinary issues. And sanction you imposed was a suspension. It was a six-month suspension, stayed with 1 year probation, all to take effect if and when he resolved his tax suspension.
So we follow up on just this question. If he's already suspended, I guess we can modify a suspension. Right now he's suspended and he couldn't practice law at all. Indefinitely until he until something else happened. I mean, he'd have to satisfy the OCDC that in some
well,
manner.
Well, isn't the problem one of them's an administrative suspension?
Well,
isn't that the problem? I mean, theoretically, somebody could be reinstated. Could somebody be reinstated without going through us on a tax suspension or not?
Not if it's over 6 months. He's been okay. suspended for 6 months, so at
okay.
this point he has to go through the
so
regular
reinstatement. So he'll have to go through the normal processes.
I'm sorry. Was the Schutz case a six-month case?
The Schutz case, I'm not sure. He had resolved his tax, or he hadn't resolved his tax issue by the time. I don't know whether he had, had been longer than 6 months.
Okay. This is in a nature follow-up to Judge Fisher's question that if we're beyond 6 months, if he has to go through a proceeding with us before he's reinstated, why isn't what you're asking for something that should be considered at that time, not something that should be pre-ruled at this time?
It could be considered through the reinstatement process.
So 6 months from February would have been July.
So he's past that.
Oh, I know. At this point he is, but at the time he would have been notified. He feels he's been notified in July. So what happens? So the administrative thing is, if you pay your taxes, you're admitted in just without dealing with the unauthorized practice of law or anything else.
No, if you pay your taxes, the unauthorized practice of law charge still remains because he did that in derogation of this court's order.
The administrative suspension would have disappeared had he paid his taxes within 6 months and given us evidence of that. Whether or not we would want to impose discipline for unauthorized practice would be an entirely separate issue.
I misspoke. I don't think he has the 6 months. I think he wouldn't have to take the NPRE, but he still had to go through the reinstatement.
I may have made a statement, and I really kind of intended for it to be a question, in the sense of is a tax suspension an administrative suspension or not?
Well,
maybe that's a better way to say it.
Pardon? I believe that recently in a case, I believe it's called Miller, that this court ruled that there are no administrative suspensions, there's no administrative discipline or suspensions, that a suspension, a ruling from this court is a suspension.
Well, do you clarify that by rule? I mean, could OCC, because there's apparently a believe that there's two kinds of suspension, administrative and other suspension, and you're saying, could you clarify that by rule or clarify these?
Do our rules need to be clarified to make that clear, or do they suggest now there's two types?
I don't think the rule in any area suggests that there are two types. I think that in a Spencer Miller case that came down, I believe, last year, it was in that case that the court talked about there not being an administrative, that nothing in the rules designates a discipline as administrative versus a disciplinary suspension, which, you know, quite frankly, our office had thought there was a distinction before, and we did distinguish between, we'd say that was an administrative suspension, but we want you to impose what we think is the, you know, greater discipline, it being a disciplinary suspension. But in that, my understanding was that in that Spencer Miller case, you said that that distinction did not exist.
But if you get paying the taxes.
I don't want to even try to confuse the issue, but isn't there a difference between if you don't do your CLE and taxes, and CLE's administrative suspension, but that maybe your office was treating tax like administrative suspension, but the court thought it was different. Is that? I don't mean to try to confuse the issue. If you're not, okay.
I guess I don't know where you're going here. I mean, our office takes the position that even in CLE suspensions or suspensions when a person hasn't paid their bar enrollment fees, that if they go ahead and do, or you know, complete their CLE or pay their bar enrollment fees, even though their reinstatement is retroactive, mm-hmm. that they are still chargeable with the unauthorized practice of law
I understand that is, but do you have to do more than just pay to be reinstated on the tax issue?
You have to go through the reinstatement process.
Okay, so isn't that what makes it different? Isn't that what makes it not an administrative suspension? Because it requires an extra process on behalf of the attorney in order to get reinstated. Whereas the other issues, you pay your dues. If it's within a certain time frame, you're automatically reinstated mm-hmm. without having to apply.
That is the tax suspension, if you resolve it within 6 months, is that retroactive too?
Or I believe it is. It's retroactive. I believe it is retroactive.
So is it ab initio retroactive or is it prospective?
I'm not sure. I think it's retroactive.
But here we're past that 6 months. So
we are past that 6 months.
So it's not the issue in this case. Okay.
Thank you. Any more questions? You have more time in rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court. The issue charged by the information is whether I engaged in the unauthorized practice of law on January 8, 2010, in Judge David Lee Vincent III's courtroom, Division 8, in St. Louis County Courthouse. That's the only issue raised in the information before this court. I did not, since I was completely unaware of this prior tax administrative suspension.
Weren't you given notice to your last address that's listed with the bar, and you're required to keep your current address with the bar precisely so you can get notices?
Yes, no notice was received.
But if multiple notices were sent to that address over time and you keep saying nothing was received, that seems surprising. And if that's a correct address, are you saying it was not a correct address or it was correct?
It was a correct address. It still is a correct address, all mail gets delivered.
And is it just this mail that you didn't get, or are there other client matters you have also not gotten?
It was sporadic but limited. This was one, because I know Thomas F. Simon's signature. I would instantly recognize mail from the former clerk here. Uh-huh. I didn't receive any such notification.
Are there any other instances where you have not received notifications that you're aware of, other than these disciplinary authorities?
The Missouri DOR. They didn't send anything that I received.
But only things relating to this tax suspension, those are the only things you didn't get? I mean, you have a question if they're sent, or I'm just trying to figure this out. It seems odd that it's just these.
I don't know what mail I did not receive. I can't prove a negative. I don't know.
I mean,
but
you
these
know
were
didn't
shown later,
this.
And I didn't receive these.
But you're saying
Weren't you advised in July? I mean, there's this divergence of facts or allegations of facts. Ms. Nation says you were informed in July. You knew in July that you were not, you were suspended.
I was
and
contesting
you continued
this.
With another motion on July 28th. July 10th. Was that not the case? When did you know? You said you found, how did you find out in the stream of business that you were suspended?
In mid-February of 2010, I got a follow-up letter from Alan Pratzel at OCDC referencing, but not including any copy, of Justice Price's day-to-day February 9th, 2009 order that Thomas Casey, the chair of the disciplinary hearing panel, came up here and found it. Nobody had ever seen it, including me.
But so what did you do then? You're in cases in San Luis County. What did you do when you heard you were suspended?
I had already, in mid-February, ceased my practice in Missouri.
So what about these July cases?
Okay. One, they're not part of the information. Two, they were preventing a default pro bono for my ministers. At 7:20 Tuesday night, I received, going through my inbox, their package. Court was 9 o'clock the next morning. It was subsequently suggested I could have prepared the pleadings for their name and their signature, and they filed them, but they were out of town. I prevented the default. I did file those in motion to dismiss.
Wasn't there a second instance a little bit later?
It was the same pro bono clients by a different creditor 3 weeks later.
It is your statement that you're not practicing, that was a unique circumstance, and that you have not, since you got the notice, since you learned in February about this issue, you have not practiced?
Correct. I make a distinction based on the definition of practice law for a fee. There was no fee. I've not had fee.
Wait. You're telling me that, now I worked at legal aid for 23 years. I was subject to the disciplinary practice of the state of Missouri. I charged no fees.
Correct. You were compensated.
I was not subject to the disciplinary practice of the state of Missouri?
No, you were. You were compensated as a lawyer.
Not by the clients. These were all, and we have pro bono lawyers. We have 2,000 pro bono lawyers at legal aid. Mm-hmm. You mean they do not have to follow the canons of ethics?
Yes, we do.
Well, that would include the unauthorized practice. I mean, you don't recognize now that you cannot do pro bono work in Missouri if you're suspended? Or are you saying you still think you could go in and file something tomorrow for your ministers?
I have not. I cannot.
Do you understand you're not allowed to under the law?
Yes.
Okay. But at the time, you did not understand that? Is that your position?
No, not at all. This was in the formative stages.
Okay. And you also know that Missouri law prohibits you from practicing law if you've not paid your taxes? That's the statute? Are you aware of that?
No.
You're still not aware of that, even though you've gotten notice you've been suspended under that law for not paying your taxes?
What we have here is the January 8th, 2010. There's been nothing from DOR or an assistant attorney general or anybody else.
But didn't you look it up? When you found out your legs did not have paid taxes, didn't you inquire with DOR about that? Or?
Yes, I did. And that's what I have in my brief, is they said over the phone there were estimated taxes from 2003 and 2004, which is when I was out with cancer, and they were estimated. In order to be delinquent under the statute, they have to be actual
taxes. Well, you have
taxes.
To file a contest of it within a certain amount of time if you're not going to be owing the taxes. You haven't done anything? I mean, you know, sometimes we do get tax bills we don't think are right. I completely agree, and they may well be incorrect, but you can't just let them sit there. Neither the federal or state government takes really kindly to that.
Correct. There are two things there. One, these were raised in 2010, to my first knowledge, for 2003 and 2004. The accountant is doing amended returns that apportion Illinois and Missouri income.
Since February.
There was a few thousand dollars of Missouri income during that period of time. But they want $13,000 in taxes, and it's way, way less than that.
But, you know, there's a provision under our rule. If you file something showing you filed a contest of the taxes, then the suspension doesn't apply. But we didn't get either a statement you'd reached an agreement or anything showing you had filed a protest or a contest.
Correct. Once the taxes are apportioned between the two states, which my CPA did not do originally, then that certificate of tax compliance can be filed with this court.
But do you understand if you let more time go by than the statute allows, you can't practice whether or not your accountant is very quick? I mean, you have certain statutory deadlines for and rule deadlines for filing a contest.
Yeah, I think they'd already gone by 2010 when they first were brought to my attention from 2003 and 2004, but I don't know what the time is for contesting.
But
intention is not to contest, but comply.
Be that as it may,
yes, Your Honor.
What's the term suspension mean when the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel says you were suspended? What's that mean to you?
Well, I got a letter referencing something, but I'd never gotten what he referenced. It was still never introduced here.
When he says you're suspended, what does that mean to you?
Well, I think it means from that immediate moment you can't do anything.
Right.
And then since it is an administrative suspension on taxes, I think it's impossible to immediately cease any, it's in my brief, any and all practice in terms of requests for admissions, defaults. I prevented defaults for my two ministers pro bono on those two subsequent occasions, which were not charged in the information. So that is correct. That was done. If I had it to do over again, would I let them be defaulted?
Would
in retrospect,
able,
I suppose
would
I would.
Person, would a lay official of the church be able to go there and say, oh, I'm going to avoid these defaults, I'm going to file something for them even though I'm not a lawyer?
I didn't catch your question, Your Honor.
Would a lay person at the church be able to go in and file some papers for the ministers so that a default couldn't be taken against them?
No. No, it would require a lawyer.
Well, in the future, wouldn't you allow them, would you prepare the documents for them to file themselves without your signature on it? Wouldn't that be the correct thing to do?
In retrospect, yes.
Okay, so you said if you had to do it over again, you'd still file them, but...
No, I would not file them.
Okay.
No, I would not file them. I got this mail at 7:20 at night. Court was at 9 o'clock the next morning. And if I made a mistake...
You would find some other way to deal with it. If you
that's come to my attention subsequently.
If a similar situation occurred in the future, even with a short time frame, you would find some way to avoid actually filing.
Yes, I would.
Okay, that's what we're trying to understand. If you understand, you can't.
Yes,
do that.
Yes, I definitely understand. Okay, the disciplinary hearing panel, which looked into this in great depth, they rendered a 3-0 unanimous finding in my favor without any dissenting opinion recommending dismissal of this particular information. The penalties proposed, I think, are overkill and counterproductive. A disciplinary suspension as opposed to administrative may have reciprocity implications with Illinois. And so if there's no license to practice law, there is no income, there are no funds to pay those taxes, so that position that OCDC has taken is not a remedy that's going to be effective in any way. I believe that once this information is dismissed, if that is the court's will, and that's what
I ask. Well, the OCDC's purpose is not to be remedial. Their purpose is to make sure people follow the law. People that are lawyers follow the law. Whether or not the taxes are paid or not, that's for you to deal with the DOR, not OCDC. I'm not sure cares whether or not you pay it or not. They want to make sure you're following the law as a lawyer.
I see those as inextricably intertwined and connected, because it was their purpose all throughout, pay your taxes and this will go away. If I could have afforded counsel to represent me, I would have done those things. I have some Illinois matters in the hopper that will allow that and reasonably before the end of this year.
But you've raised the argument that the only issue here is not the July unauthorized practice, but the alleged January unauthorized practice, and you said you did not have notice.
Correct.
At that time that you'd been suspended.
Correct.
Did the disciplinary hearing panel, did they find you did not get notice, or did they find that you did, but that the kind of notice you got was inadequate? I mean, at least in part, I know they found the letter.
Second.
But did they address whether you got the mail or not, or did they not
address
it?
They did.
That?
They believed that a fair inference could be drawn, and since mail wasn't even proven that it was sent, but that is a last known address, they drew the inference that the mail probably was received without any proof of that. What they focused on was even if I'd been served or signed a green card certified mail return receipt requested, then it was still deficient for the DOR underlying suspension, for which there was no communication whatsoever.
Because
so they went on the constitutional
grounds. They thought you would
grounds.
Have believed that it was just a prospective suspension, but you didn't know when it was going to take effect? Or
we still don't know when it took effect. It may have taken effect February 9, 2009, that nobody knew anything about.
I thought you said you'd finally gotten a copy of it. Did you not finally get a copy of this?
It was added to the record after this case was closed, was the first I'd ever seen it. And Tom Casey came up here and got it from this building.
But isn't there a presumption? I mean, as long as I've been a lawyer or law student even, The mailbox rule is if you mail it, it doesn't get returned, presumed delivered.
I don't believe that my law license should depend on the vagaries of the United States Postal Service, Your Honor. I really don't. If I'd received it, I would have acted on it. I didn't receive it.
We do have recent due process cases which indicate that if you receive a mailed letter and it's returned and it's not returned, that you can presume delivery. That's okay. You don't have to prove someone actually got it. You just have to prove you made reasonable efforts to provide notice. And people have lost their property over that, which is also a property right. Obviously, your right to particular property. So how would we, is there a case law to distinguish the professional licensing from those kind of cases, Flowers and other cases where the U.S. Supreme Court has indicated that reasonable attempts at notice, like registered mail and followed up by regular mail, are adequate?
Yeah. Well, here, certified mail would have cost $5.59 that they did not spend and did not send. They don't have anything returned. They don't have any proof of mailing. They have nothing. On that case about a tax deed foreclosure, there are other, they also publish in the newspaper. They also post it on the door. There are all kinds of notices there. There's just the one kind of notice here that was not received. And it's my residence office. We have different mail letter carriers different days. Your Honor?
When did you first know you had a problem with unpaid taxes?
Mid-February of 2010, when I got Alan Pretzel's letter that referenced it.
I'm sorry, excuse me. But didn't the Department of Revenue contact you much, much sooner than that?
No, I didn't get anything from 2003, 2004.
You didn't know you had any tax problems at all?
No.
Until February of 2010?
Right, that's my first notice ever. It was referenced by Alan Pretzel's letter as the underlying thing for this.
Now, one thing I understand from looking at the record is apparently even at the disciplinary hearing panel, the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel didn't offer into evidence the letter that supposedly went out like in 2008.
Correct.
It was on the list.
It is not of the record. Neither was Justice Price's February 9, 2009 right. underlying order right. or the later. None right. of them were.
Or the DOR. DOR notice was not in either? The Department of Revenue notice?
No, that was all part of the 96 pages supplemental motion after the fact filed this summer. It was never before the committee.
You file your taxes in 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, or didn't you file taxes in Missouri? Didn't they let you know while you're behind in your taxes?
As non-resident Missouri income, I didn't get any notices from Missouri DOR until copies of them were submitted as part of this after the fact, but not on the record. It was news to me.
Do you live in Illinois?
Correct.
And you're saying you didn't know you owed Missouri taxes?
Correct. The account had not apportioned between the two states, and I was out after 5 months after radical prostatectomy. I had no idea. And then he brought it to my attention after I asked him about this. So he's apportioning the taxes between the two states. But what they wanted was estimated based on healthy years. My earnings were way, way down those years. And so paying the actual taxes, and in fact, you have to owe actual taxes to be delinquent under the statute, and all they've ever had was estimated taxes. So that's being resolved. It's not yet resolved. If I could have resolved before today, I would have.
As I understand, the disciplinary hearing found all those facts in accordance with your position. I mean, they found that you did not, that you had no prior notice that your license was suspended and so forth. The disciplinary hearing found all those facts in your favor.
They did.
What they did was just said, well, it doesn't matter. We're going to base our decision on the presumption that you got it because it was mailed.
I mean, yes, they went with that presumption. Then they questioned the constitutionality of, is that sufficient notice?
Right.
And the subsequent notice that was subject to suspension, but there was never been a notice actually suspended. That was where Tom Casey really saw the flaw and the simple correction of doing it right.
Thank you.
Thank you. My time expired. Thank you for allowing me the time to answer your questions. I'm sorry I'm here under these circumstances.
Ms. Nation, how do you, now you're not bound by the hearing panel's decision.
Correct.
But what weight did you give that in your decision on this?
Well, I believe that he clearly continued to engage in the unauthorized practice of law, and that's why we...
After the decision by the hearing.
But that's not the basis of the information. He says it's just the January unauthorized practice.
That's correct. But he did stipulate at the hearing that he had continued to practice law. It was a stipulation at the hearing that he had filed those motions in July.
Okay. But still, he's the only discipline before us is for his January practice. Are you saying it was amended and he agreed to an amendment of...
He's
shaking his head. No, we want to make sure we are fair here.
He stipulated to it. I don't have any evidence that there was anything more than that. As to the...
What the panel found was that they concluded that he was not guilty of professional misconduct under the rule. Correct? That's what the DHP found.
Correct.
And they found it based upon the fact... They found it in spite of that admission. And you're suggesting that we should not find it in spite of that admission.
They found it in spite of that admission because they found that your order suspending him was null and void, and that therefore he could not have practiced. He could not have engaged in the unauthorized practice of law.
And they found it because they basically found that because he didn't know that he was, that due process protected him in that regard.
They did. They found that because he didn't receive the court's February 2nd order suspending him. They found that he got the notice from the clerk that said you're subject to imminent suspension.
If you don't get it done, well, but.
Correct, that you have this time to resolve it, but they say he didn't get the order.
Is the order mailed, or how do you get the order?
At the time, the order was not sent out.
So they found he probably was not aware of the order. Now, we do that differently now?
You do.
And we send it out specifically saying you are suspended?
You do.
But this was in an earlier time when the rule required that by publication?
Correct. The letter that was sent to him, Tom Simon's letter, I wanted to correct this, it was in the record. It is referenced specifically in the DHP panel's decision as part of our Exhibit 4, Informants Exhibit 4. It was attached to Rita Schonsmeyer's affidavit. And so the...
Which letter was that?
That was the October 7th letter from Tom Simon telling him his license was subject to suspension.
But nothing ever telling him that how was he to know when it would be suspended?
Correct. He was not provided specific notice as to the date.
In fact, he really wasn't suspended when the letter said he was going to be.
Correct.
It wasn't until February of 2009 that he actually was suspended. So if he had relied on that, he'd have quit practicing law for a whole year before he would have had to.
Well, about 6 months, but he would have had all that extra time to resolve his tax situation also, which he didn't do. With regards to the...
Let me ask you the legal question based on this fact. Is due process satisfied by sending you a notice that we're going to suspend you? If that's all you ever get?
I believe in this case it was, because he was given notice and the opportunity to be heard. And he
What would he have filed they made no finding that he received that notice. They based it on a presumption.
Correct.
That it was sent. So
correct.
So let's just for sake of argument, let's say he received it.
Mm-hmm.
What type of, who would he apply to for a hearing?
I believe that he would have filed something with the court that said, I object to this because I didn't receive any of the notices he says he didn't receive. And he also could have taken that up with the Department of Revenue and contested it, because in fact he hasn't filed at all. It's not just a matter of the amount due. It's the fact that he didn't file at all. And so when he talks about I can't be delinquent because they don't know how much tax I owed, well, that's because he hasn't filed. And it's kind of a circular argument. If you don't file, they don't know exactly how much you owe. But you don't get to, you know, avoid the effect of not filing by not having a date and amount certain.
I'm just, and I know this is not something briefed, and so you may not be able to address it in more detail, but Assuming the only notice he got were that one that's in the record that from October, you said, that said we're going to suspend your license. I'm wondering if it's analogous to the situation we had recently where there's a question of when you can appeal an order of contempt. And can you appeal it when the judge says, if you don't file this or comply with this order and so forth by I think in that case it was January 30th, then I will hold you in contempt. Is that sufficient for you to come up? And we said, no, you actually have to have entered your order of contempt for them to do so, because in fact, the court will not impose the contempt by that day, but may give more time or there may be more facts and so forth, and you want to have a real controversy. And I think he's arguing the same was true here, that at most the evidence shows that he got notice that he would be suspended, but never that he was. And so is it fair to say then he knew he was engaged in the unauthorized practice when, until he got a notice that it actually occurred, he would have no way of knowing? He might have a way of knowing, but he can't be held responsible for not knowing on the date when the actual suspension did occur.
Well, I don't think he should be allowed to sit on his hands when he's told that he is subject to imminent suspension. I don't, and that
is there a procedure
occurred.
Laid out to him? Do they say you may get suspended, but here's a procedure for a hearing for objecting to the suspension?
The procedure provides that you need to resolve the matter with the Department of Revenue. And it says that you're going to be suspended after 30 days. So I believe that what he should have done was tried to resolve it with the Department of Revenue and filed some kind of a contest or protest. And, if that contest or protest was not to his, didn't work out the way he wanted it to, then he should have filed something with the court that said, here's my problem, here's what I've done. And
our rules do provide for giving us notice there's a contest going on, and then the suspension does not take effect. Is that right?
The rules say something about a contest or a protest and the notices that he gets from the Department of Revenue, which he denies receiving, but they all have ways. Here's what you do. Here's how you protest. Here's, how you try to resolve this.
Yeah, what he got was what they call a non-filer letter, right?
He actually got 5 notices for each of the years. Well, actually, I'll take that back. He got 3 notices for each of the years. 2 of the notices were returned to the Department of Revenue.
Oh, they were returned.
To the certified mail notices that were sent by the Department of Revenue were returned unclaimed. The notices that he sent, that the Department of Revenue sent by regular mail, did not come back.
And did the DHP address whether or not they believed he got those notices?
No.
Well, you say that, but didn't they say, that was the one contested issue at trial, and what they said was, we're going to base it on the presumption without regard to whether or not. They did not make a factual finding whether he received it or not. What they said was, we're based on the presumption.
The DHP didn't rule either way on the Department of Revenue notices. They only, I believe, stated specifically that they find that he received the court's notice.
Right, and that finding was based upon a presumption. It wasn't
correct.
Based on facts. It was based on the presumption that it was mailed.
The presumption that it was mailed and the fact that it wasn't returned.
Right.
Is that a rebuttable presumption? So it would be up to the fact finder to decide if the presumption is not conclusive. It would be up to the fact finder to decide if it was rebutted or not.
Correct.
The presumption is that you have file in your file, you have a note that you mailed it. It's the presumption that they received it.
Correct. And we didn't. And then we have an affidavit from the bar enrollment clerk that they did not.
Returned. Didn't get it returned.
Yeah.
She has a method by which, if they are returned, she takes extra steps to make sure the notice gets out.
And then, the legal issue then, just the way the DHP saw the legal issue was, we assume that he got it, and we still find that his due process rights were violated.
Because he didn't get a copy of the order.
Right. Okay. Thank you.